We got a phone call from our doctor and she asked if we were together and if we were sitting down. And that's never what you want to hear from your OB. And she told us that they had just gotten the results back from our testing and that there was a 99.5% probability of our baby having Down syndrome.
They had one of their nurses come in and I remember she had an iPad and it was just full of pictures of other little kids that had been through these surgeries. And they walked through like, hey, this is the type of machine she's going to be hooked up to. And these are the type of incisions and tubes and all the things you're going to see. And it's going to be overwhelming, but we want you to hold this tablet. We want you to study these pictures so that like the shell shock is minimalized whenever you go in, because it's going to be a lot.
When it was time for that surgery and sending our tiny little baby off watching her be rolled away on a cart is one of the most helpless feelings I've ever had.
Today, we're joined by Jason and Sarah Pollock with a story about medical uncertainty, resilience, and the strength of showing up every day for someone you love. Welcome to the Carti Hopecast, where we explore stories that shape us, journeys of resilience, hope, and perseverance. We seek the lessons that emerge when we face the unexpected and find strength in the struggle.
I'm Adam Head, and today I'm joined by Sarah and Jason Pollock, parents whose journey with their daughter Iris includes a Down syndrome diagnosis, complex heart defects, and a stroke following surgery. Their story is one of navigating the unknown with courage and faith, learning to advocate for their daughter while also holding each other up through one of the most difficult seasons of their lives. Jason, Sarah, welcome to the Hopecast.
Thank you for having us.
Before we jump in, how are you guys doing today?
We're doing good.
Yeah. Had a good drive from Northwest Arkansas and ready to talk about our little girl.
Celebrated Iris's third birthday this weekend. And
wonderful.
Yeah, we're doing good. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you guys being here.
Thanks.
So I'd love to dive right into your story. I know your journey with Iris began with an unexpected bit of news early in your pregnancy. To start, would you walk us back through those first moments, what you learned and understood from your physician at that time about your daughter, Iris?
Yeah. So Iris was our third child. We had genetic testing done with each pregnancy. I was always advanced maternal age for each of the kids that we had. So we just always did that as kind of par for the course whenever I got pregnant. We wanted to mostly find out the sex of the baby as early as we possibly could.
Yeah.
And then know if there were going to be any kind of abnormalities that we would have to deal with. And it was always just everything's fine. You're having a boy, you're having a girl. But this time around, we got the phone call from our doctor that it was the day before Thanksgiving and Jason was off work for the holiday. We were just out bopping around as a family, running some errands before we headed up to Missouri for the holiday. And we got a phone call from our doctor and she asked if we were together and if we were sitting down. And that's never what you want to hear from your OB. And she told us that they had just gotten the results back from our testing and that there was a 99.5% probability of our baby having Down syndrome. And I fell apart. I was sobbing uncontrollably. I had to just didn't speak the rest of the conversation. And Jason had to kind of take over. And our doctor told us that she said, I really struggled with whether or not to call you. I didn't want to send you guys into Thanksgiving holiday with this news. I also didn't want to sit on it myself for a long weekend without you guys knowing. So take the time. Process, come up with whatever questions you have, and we'll get together next week and talk about it.
Yeah, and we wrestled for a little while with, you know, why would you tell us that before going to a family holiday that's supposed to be lighthearted and joyous occasion, you know? But hindsight, looking back on it, it was really good timing because we got to kind of sit in that first few days with family members and people that supported us through that. And it's just a lot of heaviness that comes with a phone call like that. So
yeah, sure.
Yeah, that was really how that went. I mean, it was pretty rough. I remember that very distinctly. I was driving the truck And it was almost to the point where we had to pull over and stop and kind of gather ourselves a little bit before we went home. So,
and that led to me for a prolonged season of grief throughout. I was only 10 weeks along at that point.
Okay.
And was spent, I don't know, probably the first 4 or 5 months of the pregnancy just grieving. I was scared about hurt, knowing that there would be health things coming down the road. I worried about, am I going to bond with her the same way I did with my other kids? Like, I don't know anybody with Down syndrome. Am I going to be capable of raising somebody who has special needs? I don't know what that's going to look like. And selfishly, like, we were later in life when we got married and it always looked forward to empty nest years. And then we're grieving, like, we probably will never have an empty nest now. We probably will always have a child living in our house. And so I could not move past that season. And there was finally one day I had just dropped our son, who was a kindergartner at the time, dropped him off at school, and I was driving back home and I had music playing in the background, and it was playing these lullabies that were set to Bible verses. And one started playing from a Bible verse that says, "You are fearfully and wonderfully made. And before I knew you, before you drew your first breath, I knew your name." And I just broke down and lost it. It may sound weird to others, but it felt like I was kind of eavesdropping on a conversation between God and this baby who was a stranger to me in my belly, and knowing that he has made her the way that he wants her to be made, and he is in control of this. And it's like everything finally just kind of was at peace for me at that point.
It's a powerful moment.
It was.
Jason, were you experiencing some of the same complex emotions?
It's a little bit of an emotional spaghetti early on, is the best way I can describe it. What's weird, though, is like I'm normally the serial worrier in our house. I'm always the one that struggles with anxiety. But with the diagnosis piece, for whatever reason, I just stayed pretty calm, cool, and collected. And that as we kind of talk through the journey, one of the things that was, I think, a blessing looking back on it is like neither of us were down kind of in the pit of despair at the same time. So for whatever reason, during the pregnancy time, you know, I felt really at peace and like this is going to be fine. And so I was able to help Sarah through that hard time. So,
yeah. Well, when Iris was born, things moved pretty quickly.
Yeah.
NICU stays, oxygen support, constant monitoring, the whole works as far as that goes. Can you take us to that moment? What was going through your minds as parents walking through the midst of that medical intensity?
Yeah, I think to understand that, you kind of have to back up a step, because we knew. So when we found out that Iris was 99% probable going to have Down syndrome, there's a whole plethora of conversations that come up between you and your family doctor or medical personnel. And we learn things like it's something like 60% or more of kids with Down syndrome have some kind of heart defect or other physical, you know, deformity, abnormality. And so you begin, while the baby's still inside Sarah, you begin this whole series of tests and scans to figure out what the picture is going to look like. So we figured out probably midway through the pregnancy, when we could actually get a really good scan of the heart, that Iris had a severe heart defect called an AV canal. And the best way to describe that is, you know, your heart has a series of valves internally to direct blood to where it needs to go and all that. Well, Iris was born essentially without the whole center of her heart. So she had one of the valves there partially, and the other one was completely missing. So the doctor knew that, you know, there's a percentage of her blood that's going, oxygenated blood that's going where it needs to go, but there's a large percentage that is not and is just being expelled through her lungs. And so we kind of knew walking into the birth situation that as long as Iris was inside mama, everything was fine, but nobody really knew what was going to happen once Iris was birthed. And so we had a tradition with every one of our kids that we did a little baby moon vacation before they were born.
Yeah.
So we knew with Iris that we had to have another ultrasound in Little Rock a couple weeks before the due date. Mm-hmm. And so we just said, hey, we'll go down and make a weekend vacation out of it, and that'll be the last thing we do before we head home. And that'll be the home stretch, getting ready to come back down here in 2 weeks and deliver. And our other two kids were 2 weeks late, and so we never in a million years thought Iris would come early. Mm-hmm. So we finished that vacation and stopped by the hospital to go do the ultrasound. And, you know, Sarah's blood pressure was starting to ramp up a little bit, and there were some issues with amniotic fluid and some other things. And the medical staff was like, hey, you're not going home. You're going to the hospital right now to have this baby. And we're like, No. Like, we're not ready. We don't have any clothes. We don't have anything packed. We don't have childcare lined up for the two big kids. And so we had to make a lot of decisions really fast. And the reality set in that in a few hours, we're going to have this baby here with us. And so we go over to the hospital. We get geared up and ready to go. Sarah did great through all of this. But we get into labor and delivery. And it went relatively fast, but the really odd thing about labor and delivery was with the other two kids, you have like the doctor that's doing the delivery, and then you have normally one or two other medical staff in there. Mm-hmm. But with Iris, we were in this room where there was, I think I counted 17 or 18 medical personnel in there at one time.
People everywhere.
And there's this air about the room where it's this feeling of uncertainty of like, as soon as this baby comes out, we have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, all heck could break loose or everything could be fine.
But everybody at the ready.
Yeah.
Everybody at the ready.
For whatever.
And it's people from all different disciplines because you just don't know what's going to go down. So
sure.
Do you want to take it from there?
Yeah. So it was really important for me, if at all possible, to be able to do skin to skin with her for a few minutes. And I felt like she probably was going to be whisked away, but thought, if it's at all possible, please let me have that time with her. Yeah. So that they were able to accommodate that. And I was able to have that couple minutes of her, you know, having her laid on my chest and getting to meet her for the first time. But it was like, I didn't really even get to fully immerse myself in that time. Cause I just remember like scanning the room and seeing all of these people, and they just had game face on, like, we are ready for business. And I just couldn't relax into the moment because I was like, something is not right. So they took her away, cleaned her up, measured her, and then they had to put her in a warming table. And then a few minutes later, they had to move her next door and said that, you know, she needs some help with oxygen. And then a little bit later, they brought her in to tell me goodbye and had to take her down to the NICU. So I've actually been in counseling for that moment of like, I have just given birth to my little girl, and now she is whisked away on another floor of a hospital. I am in recovery all by myself, and like the only thing I could do was pump milk for her. And so I pumped milk like a mad woman. felt like the only thing I could do to support her. So the next day finally got to go down and meet her and hold her for the first time. But I never would have thought that so many tubes and wires could come out of one tiny little, it took an army to get her out of the bed in position so we could hold her. But
yeah, and this is pre-heart surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, it was CPAP machines, nasal cannulas, like all the things to just keep her oxygen level where it needed to be. And then, I mean, really from there, the trick was, is we had to figure out, can she sustain on her own to get her to 6 months? So 6 months old is kind of the magic number for heart surgery for the little ones. And they described to us that the difference between doing an open heart surgery at birth versus 6 months is the difference between operating on a heart that's the size of like a pistachio versus a heart that's like the size of a tangerine. So it's a pretty significant difference.
Yeah.
And they said that the surgeries are, I mean, just night and day better results if we can get to 6 months. So the kind of condensed version of her first 6 months of life is we spent 2 months between two different medical facilities trying to figure out a concoction of medical treatment that would get her to where she could sustain life to 6 months. And so diuretics, vasodilation medicine, the whole nine yards. And we got to where, you know, I think she's going to be able to do this and get to 6 months. And the only thing that was keeping us in the hospital for that last probably 4 or 5 weeks was the fact that she wasn't nursing on her own. And they really want to see a baby be able to gain weight on their own before they send them home.
Take a bottle.
Yeah. So she wasn't taking a bottle because she had this horrible gag reflex and they thought it was tied to the heart issue. And
but so her body was working so hard just to keep herself alive that she was expending too much energy to feed by mouth.
And just such a helpless feeling for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of watching her.
Yes.
So we had one particular doctor that I guess he had been in the medical industry for a long, long time. He had been with pediatric cardiology the whole time. And he just, after about right around the 2 month mark, maybe a little bit over 2 months, but he visited with Sarah and he said, hey, is literally the only thing keeping you here is the breastfeeding part. And, you know, Sarah was like, yeah. And, so he basically said, hey, we're going to teach you how to run an NG tube. We're going to teach you how to use a feeding pump, and we're going to send you and the baby home, which was, I mean, it was a huge blessing. Because this is
talk about overwhelming, having to be trained on
the mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And inserting a tube into my baby's stomach through her nose. And
yeah, it was a rodeo, but we were on the tail end of the pandemic. And so the safety protocols was still pretty high at the hospitals. And so like the two bigger kids had not gotten to see their sister a single time during this. They didn't get to meet her in person until she was 2.5 months old and we got to bring her home. And then because of that, we had gotten to a point where I was trying to spend as much time at the NICU with Sarah and the baby that I could. But our two bigger kids, they were floating in between grandparents' houses and friends of ours' houses, and they got to where they needed stability in life too. So we had to make a really tough decision where I went back to Northwest Arkansas and took care of the two big kids. And then Sarah stayed in the hospital by herself with the baby. And so that was the first time in our marriage that we had spent long stretches of time apart from one another. And that was tough, you know, because I was at home doing, you know, Sarah's a stay-at-home mom and does a great job with that. But I was at home doing what she normally does on a daily basis. And then I was away from, you know, big decisions that were being made. And Sarah was left by herself to make a lot of those decisions. And we were having to communicate via phone and text a lot. So it's just a really, like, vulnerable, kind of yucky place and feeling, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got through it.
So you get through that 6 month period and then the surgery.
It's go time.
And the surgery. Yeah. So we had been prepared since pregnancy that surgery was going to happen. It was going to be a reality. We knew it was coming. That part at least didn't feel like a shock, just the fact of it. But then getting to the hospital when it was time for that surgery and sending our tiny little baby off on a watching her be rolled away on a cart is one of the most helpless feelings I've ever had in my life. Like we knew that they were incredible surgeons and so like well trained and like just rock stars, but there is just there's just nothing like sending that feeling of surrender and I have zero control over anything that's about to happen. And that was real tough.
And we had had enough time, you know, she had got to come home at the 2.5-ish month mark. So we had had enough time leading up to heart surgery to really bond with Iris. She's
part of us.
And she, you know, she's become our little home girl and, you know, she's got a very, very special, special spot in our heart. So to have that strength of bond and then to take her down, you know, for what is a very invasive heart surgery and know that she's going to be on heart lung bypass, some very dangerous circumstances, you know, and you wheel that kid away on a hospital bed and you're like, I don't know if I'm ever going to see my child alive ever again. It is a very lonely, unfair, just not good place to be. And we had to sit in that for a little while, but you know, the staff, at the particular place we were, did a really good job of preparing us for what we were going to see post surgery, which we were grateful for. They had one of their nurses come in and I remember she had an iPad and it was just full of pictures of other little kids that had been through these surgeries. And they walked through like, hey, this is the type of machine she's going to be hooked up to. And these are the type of incisions and tubes and all the things you're going to see. And it's going to be overwhelming, but we want you to hold this tablet. We want you to study these pictures so that like the shell shock is minimalized whenever you go in, because it's going to be a lot. And then they were great about, you know, how often do you want us to come in and update you during the surgery? And I was like, can I be in the OR?
Constant. Yes, constant, right. Updates. Yes.
Do you want my number? Can you text me?
Yeah. So we asked for every half hour and they did that faithfully. And it's, I'll never forget whenever she came in to say, hey, Iris did great. The surgery went perfectly. There is zero leakage of blood anywhere in her heart. I mean, you could not have asked for a better outcome. And what a relief that was, and a weight off of our minds and shoulders.
We started bawling. And the lady who came in to tell us said, did you hear me? I said it was good news.
It was good news.
Yes, we heard you, but
tears of joy.
Yeah. Nothing left.
We're so overwhelmed.
Well, my experience is nowhere near what you guys have been through, but my wife and I have been through that feeling of having to have your child whisked away when they're a baby to heart surgery.
Yeah.
And there's,
it's brutal.
You feel incredibly vulnerable.
Yes.
And they're still looking at you going, we're going to do what we can do, but these are the potential outcomes, and
yep,
it feels completely helpless.
Yes.
And speaking of that, you guys had to just be, after the 6 month period and having gone through this heart surgery, finally waiting for that, having had her at home, you had to have been so depleted by now. Did either of you begin to hit a wall?
Oh,
at this point? And if so, how did you step forward through that?
Go ahead.
I think for me, so to kind of finish out the story of her heart surgery, after the repair went great, but they found out over the next few days that her heart wasn't communicating the way it should. So they had to go in a week later and put in a pacemaker to make everything communicate the way it needed to. So she had two open heart surgeries over the course of a week. And then a couple days later, we started noticing that her left side wasn't moving as well as the right side was, as she was starting to wake up. And we started kind of mentioning it to some of the nurses and doctors when they were rounding, and they said, you know, she's just had her sternum cracked open. She's probably just sore. Mm-hmm. We'll keep an eye on it. But we were not seeing any improvement. So finally, there was a doctor who was rounding one day, and we called it out again. And he said, yeah, we need to get eyes on this closer. So they did an MRI and found out that she had had a watershed stroke, which they said in the world of strokes, it's the best one to have. But that was the point where I finally hit the wall. And we got the phone call confirming the stroke, and we went back to the hospital, and the kids were down visiting us, and we had been out to lunch. And so we had to make arrangements for them and go back to the hospital to get the news. And so we had this whole team from the neurology department standing there, updating us on what had happened and what the outlook was. And I was trying to keep it together, and I fell apart. And I said, I feel like I'm now having to become an expert in neurology, and I can't process anything else. I need a few minutes just to process the fact that my baby has had a stroke, and I need to sit with that for a little bit. And they were extremely kind and understanding and respectful of that, and their team walked away and gave us a minute to now try to wrap our minds around that piece of news too. So I think for me, that was where I really just like, how much can one little 6 month old take?
Yeah. She'd already been through so much, and then watching the toll that it was having on our two bigger kids, just being separated from their mama, not getting to be around their little sister. And so it was probably a week after that I hit my wall. We had to go get Thanksgiving leftovers out of a fridge and heat it up. And we're sitting down at one of the tables, and there's nobody down there that we know. You know, we've just been through multiple heart surgeries, having to have a pacemaker put in, finding out that our little girls had a stroke. And, you know, I'm trying to help as best as I can, love and support Sarah and the rest of the family through it. And then it was just like the icing on the cake that we're at this same holiday that we got the diagnosis that she had Down syndrome. We're at the same holiday, like a year later. And I just had enough. Like, you know, we're away from our family. We're away from our friends. We're eating a lukewarm meal that we've had to reheat. And Sarah reaches her hand across the table to ask me to ask a blessing over the food. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm ticked off right now. And she was like, well, we need to talk about this. And this is one of the ways that, like, we really supported each other in marriage, is like, we weren't letting each other go down into the ditches too far. And so we just sat there for a couple hours that night hashing out, like, you know, I feel like, you know, God could have prevented all of this and prevented the Down syndrome, prevented the heart surgeries, the stroke, and we've done nothing but pray this whole time. And I was just ticked. I was at the end of my rope. And so we spent some time that night just hashing it out. She encouraged me to bring that stuff to God in prayer, and I did. After that, the next season of life, like getting our child back and seeing how our friends and family, just all of these answers to prayer and blessings, like we went from probably one of the darkest seasons of our life of complete despair and without hope to one of the most encouraging seasons of blessing that we've ever walked through. And our little girl, Iris, being a huge, huge part of that. So, and I'm sure we can go into that however much you want.
Yeah, it was one of the questions I had is, you know, you kind of started alluding to this support,
yeah,
you know, network you had as you were coming out of this dark period. And I know some of that could have been just from the medical side and medical staff, friends, others, maybe even perhaps Down syndrome organizations. But
yeah,
what surprised you most about that period of time, maybe what was available and how you were navigating that?
Yeah.
Having been on the other side of some of the intensity of that year.
Yeah, I think right away, so the period of time leading up to surgery, mm-hmm. and this is like one of the things, if you are around Iris at all, she breathed very fast and her heart rate was insanely high all the time, and her sats were always in the high 80s, so not great. But that's what we had to work with until we had heart surgery. So one of the immediate things we noticed after the surgeries were done, and this was a blessing in the midst of finding out about the stroke and everything, but one of the first things we saw when we went in there and saw her is that her breathing had slowed to normal. Her sats were up around 99 and 100, and everything was working like it should have, which that by itself,
yeah,
I mean, was
that's huge.
The answer to prayer that we needed, you know? So that we knew, like, we can work through rehabbing her left arm and left leg. We can work through, like, Sarah had a tremendous desire that, or she had a determination that Iris was going to breastfeed. And we had a lot of medical professionals saying, you need to probably swallow the reality that it's not going to happen. And she wouldn't take no for an answer. So another blessing immediately was, when she was recovering from the second open heart surgery, we got to a point where we were allowed to give, you know, the little sponges on the popsicle stick that you can give them water. We were able to give her a taste of water, and Sarah noticed instantly that the gag reflex was gone. So as soon as the heart surgery was done, there was no more gagging, period.
That little girl learned to breastfeed at like seven, eight months old and just took off.
Took off.
I kind of went rogue and took her NG tube out one day. We're like, we're just going to see if you can do this because she was doing so well with it. Like, we're going to see if you can do this without the support of the NG tube. And she was just, she knocked it out of the park.
You guys had earned the ability to go a little rogue.
Yeah,
I think
that's right.
I felt like we knew a lot by that point.
No doubt.
So we knew the heart and lungs were working right. And, you know, we saw with the breastfeeding, with the gag reflex going away, that like things that we were told are probably not ever going to happen, happened. Mm-hmm. We consider that a huge blessing. And one of my big concerns early on, especially during the pregnancy, was like, how's the world going to receive this little kid? Because I know the world can be kind of a cruel place sometimes. And man, it has been unbelievable. Like, the world has been so kind to her. We talked to family after family after family that are like, oh man, you have a kid with Down syndrome. So do we. And we were on vacation in Gulf Shores last year, and this family, they saw our tattoos, and this is a symbol that is, it means the lucky few. It's parents of kids with Down syndrome. And this family came running up and wanted to introduce their kid. They're like, we're part of the tribe too, you know?
Love that.
So there is tons and tons of support out there. And the biggest blessing of any of it is just Iris herself. Like, I cannot begin to describe. I mean, that little girl is so special to us. I mean, you probably need to talk because I don't know if I'm going to be able to.
Yeah. We call her Miss America because everywhere we go, she's waving at everybody. She's blowing kisses. We'll go somewhere where there's live music and she's cheering and clapping and hollering at the top of her lungs.
Yeah, she has a fan club everywhere we go.
Yes.
People are coming up to the tables and wanting to pinch her little chubby cheeks and wanting to squeeze on her and stuff like that. I mean, it is just, she is the light of our world. And everybody that meets her, she just leaves a smile on their face. Mm-hmm. And so I would just say, like, if you are kind of caught in the slog of finding out that your child's going to have Down syndrome, hold out hope, because in less than 9 months, you're going to have the biggest blessing you've ever had in your life. I mean, they are just the coolest people. So,
well, speaking of that, here's a quote from you guys. It's a privilege to raise a child with Down syndrome.
Absolutely.
It's a pretty powerful declaration.
It is.
Saying that. When did that become a reality for you guys? And maybe that was a moment, maybe that was a process. But is there anything more that you'd want other parents to know who are wading through that new reality?
I think for me, I knew as soon as they laid her on my chest that this is my girl. When we got home from the hospital, it felt like, you know, when soldiers get back from war and they are like bonded for life with these guys that they went through battle with. And I feel the same way about her. Like, she and I were, when those 2 or 3 months that we were in the hospital together, she and I have a bond through that can never be matched. And I think back to the amount of grief and trauma that I felt during the pregnancy of worrying that I would be able to bond with her. Mm-hmm. And then think back to to what how it is now, and even immediately after she was born, and like, oh my gosh, like you almost feel a little bit of shame for feeling that way. But then at the same time, like I would encourage anybody going through that, feel those feelings.
Yeah.
Like it is part of the grief process. You feel it, experience it, talk about it, but know that it is going to be the biggest life change in the best way possible afterward.
Yeah, I don't know if we had like listened to a podcast about this, or if I don't know if one of the pastors at church was teaching on it, but the subject of heaven came up one day in conversation. And we were having a conversation about it and just thinking about like in heaven there's not going to be any sickness or anything like that. And I don't remember if it was one of the kids or somebody said that we'll get to see Iris in heaven someday without Down syndrome. And about a day later, Sarah was like, I want to talk about that again. She was like, I don't think I want to know an Iris without Down syndrome. Hmm. And that for me was like, this is who she is. And she is just a perfect blessing this way. You know what I'm saying? And you get to this point where it's like you really don't want to see your kid any other way than they are, because they're absolutely awesome just like this. And that was in the first year of her life. So it was at that moment where I knew, like, I don't want her to change. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is who she is. This is how she's meant to be. And she, like Sarah said on the way down here actually today, that she completed our family. Like, she was the blessing we didn't know that we needed.
Well, today, Iris is thriving, happy, active, bringing joy everywhere she goes,
yep.
Like in restaurants.
Yep.
What is life like now for you guys?
She's in lots of therapies. She's going through PT and OT and speech. She loves her therapist. They are able to come to us, and she's not quite walking yet. She still has some residual effects from the stroke on her left side, so she's having some issues getting that foot down on the ground. But she's doing some cruising, and she's pulling up to standing, and she is extremely
climbing.
Determined.
Yeah.
And she went from gagging every time anything would come close to her mouth to breastfeeding to now eating with a fork, and eats more meat than any carnivore. She is the
yes. Little, she's a meatitarian.
Yes. But yeah, she's saying lots of words, and she is adored by her big brother and sister. They are obsessed with her.
Just, she's ornery too.
Yep. Yep.
Gets into everything, pulls the books off the bookshelves. It's the spice of life, you know.
Yep. She loves to look at books, loves to read,
yeah.
And she's got a bright future.
Well, Sarah, Jason, we really appreciate your vulnerability and sharing your story, your journey with Iris. Before we wrap up, what message would you want to offer to parents who may just be entering a new season of uncertainty that, like you guys, have lived through?
I would say utilize the resources available to you. Know that there's a huge community out there of people that have walked and are walking the same road. And then also, like, that child is going to bless your life in ways that you can't even imagine. And so in the midst of the grief, try to be encouraged by these stories, because you have no idea what's headed your way in a very short time.
I'd say for me, I think the biggest thing Iris has taught me is that hard doesn't equal bad. She has shown me that over and over. The thing she's gone through with a smile on her face is a constant challenge to me.
Sarah, Jason, we appreciate you guys being on the HopeCast.
Appreciate you letting us share her story.